98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
The top stories of the day, and we put them all in one spot for you every day. We call it the 4 o'clock reset. It's the only place you need to go to get caught up on every single thing going on in sports. And we start with the National Football League and the news out of Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger has a UCL injury, and he's out for the season.
The scene in the locker room Monday was, quote, super weird. That was the phrasing from guard David DeCastro, who said it's simply surreal that a guy who's been here 15-plus years isn't around the court or ready to play games in a few days. And so, yeah, this is a team that's trying to move on. They're trying to process this. They knew things weren't sounding good when they were texting with the quarterback, and he was letting them know that the outlook was a little bleak. But they are happy that this is not career-threatening. At least it doesn't seem that way right now, as alluded to by Roethlisberger.
That is Jeremy Fowler, Steelers ESPN reporter. Gambo, there was some speculation earlier that Big Ben maybe would use this to end his career. He released a statement and said, I absolutely intend to honor my contract and I will be back.
Well, this is the first time in his 16-year career that he's going to miss the majority of the season. The fewest games he had ever played in any season was 12. That happened three times. Last year, he started all 16 games for the Steelers.
Chris Mortensen reached out to Jake Delhomme. He had Tommy John surgery back in the early 2000s. He said, I came back feeling better than ever 6 months later. And that was the season they went 12-4 after that. So we'll
Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph is going to be the guy for them moving forward. In the meantime, the other injury news out of the NFL, Drew Brees injured his thumb, is going to have surgery if he hasn't already. He's going to be out at least 6 weeks.
Sources say that he has a torn ligament in the thumb on his throwing hand, his right hand. He is going to require surgery. Obviously, some major news for the New Orleans Saints. I'm told Brees is expected to be out about 6 weeks, which leaves the team with Teddy Bridgewater, who's paying more than $7 million per year as their starting quarterback going forward.
Looks like he is going to miss Week 8 against the Arizona Cardinals.
Side
with this
note,
injury.
They play both of those teams.
Steelers and the Saints.
They play both of those teams.
They're going to miss both Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger when they do.
That could be a benefit for the Cardinals. Could miss both of those guys. Yeah, well, definitely going to miss Roethlisberger. We'll see on Brees.
It was painful watching him just try to pick up a football on the sideline yesterday during that. He picked it up and he dropped it like it was 500 degrees.
You know what? I'm very interested. I'm interested to see what Bridgewater can do with that team.
Yeah.
I like Teddy Bridgewater. I hope he does well.
Mike Kazin, not going anywhere. Got himself a new contract extension on Friday night.
Hypothetical scenario that if something should come, we'll have a conversation about it. And I appreciated that. But I think, as I alluded to before, we were already moving down a line anyway, and one that I wanted to was hopeful would come to fruition. I feel like we have a lot of unfinished business here together. Something that we've started, something that we as a group are extremely passionate about. Making this organization as successful as it can be.
So, Diamondback fans don't have to worry about losing their general manager.
Nope. It's kind of what we told you last week. We were privy to some information, and we said he's not going to go anywhere. We don't expect him to go anywhere. Won a couple of bets from some of our bosses in here who were convinced he was going to the Red Sox. So, I wouldn't say anything, Ryan and Scott, but you guys, one guy owes me $10, another guy owes me lunch.
Wow, look at you.
Yep.
Naming names, calling guys out.
They were like, oh man, he's going to go to the Red Sox. I'm like, no, trust me, he's not going to the Red Sox. He's not. He's staying here. They didn't believe me.
On the field, the offense continues to struggle. Amazing to see on Saturday night. They won that game with only one base runner the whole night.
That's unbelievable.
A leadoff triple by Ahmed. He scores on a sack fly.
And that was it.
Only like the second time ever a team has won a game with one base runner since 1900.
Yes.
Absurd. And yet, they lost again yesterday, 2 of 3 to the Reds they dropped. Troy Lovello on his team struggles on the field.
So one thing that's changed over this last month is maybe we're in a race, and we know it. You guys are trying to do too much. So to answer your question, yeah, this is the longest stretch that I've seen us go through some hitting lows. We've had bad days or several bad games games in a row, but nothing like this. And I can't explain why it's happening now.
5.5 back of the final wild card spot, the open-up series against the Marlins tonight with 12 games to play.
That was the easy part of the schedule, was the Cincinnati Reds coming in.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And Trevor Bauer.
Yes, it was. So the Diamondbacks Marlins tonight. But our top story of the day, obviously it's twofold. And coming up in a few minutes, we, of course, are not trying to neglect ASU and their huge win on the road against a ranked team. But we do start with the Arizona Cardinals as our top story of the day, given their 23-17 loss to the Ravens yesterday, a game that we had gone into Friday and our Friday show with the lowest of expectations. We didn't want much out of the Cardinals. We didn't need much out of the Cardinals. Be in this game at halftime. Don't get embarrassed. Don't get blown out. Be competitive. Show some fight and some spirit that you weren't able to show last year at times when you got humiliated far too often. And if that was the standard, if that's where the bar was set, the Cardinals cleared it. The Cardinals easily cleared it with what they did yesterday. They had multiple opportunities to win that football game yesterday.
Yeah, and that's the thing that to me, and this is where you got to differentiate, okay? I understand that fans want to see this team win football games, but they're not going to the playoffs this year, okay? So it's not going to happen. What you need to see out of this year, if we're being somewhat realistic, okay, we need to see a more competitive team. They got to take the steps to be more competitive. And that step was taken yesterday. They had the ball with a chance to win the football game twice in the fourth quarter. The Cardinals had the ball with just under 9 minutes left, down six. They didn't score. They also had the ball with just under 4 minutes left, down six. Chance to win the game. Didn't score. They were in that game. Last year, week two, we shut the game off after the first quarter. There was a lot of games last year we shut the game off at halftime, or a lot of people did. Unfortunately, me and you had to watch all of those debacles.
But you know what? To your point, I didn't shut it off last year, but mentally I disengaged from it.
Right, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, mentally I'm like, okay, I'm going to start doing laundry, right, or I'm going to start cooking dinner, or I'm going to start doing something else.
It's 27-0. I don't really need to write notes down for when it's going to end up 37-0.
I was still watching, but I wasn't watching. Yeah go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your point.
But the point is, like, you know, like, and I understand, like, you know, me and you probably took a few hits on Twitter. You got to win the football game. Listen, they're not going to win games. They're not going to win a lot of football games this year. They're going to win 5 or 6 games. You're hopeful. They don't, maybe they win 7, but like, they're not going to the playoffs. But what you need to do is you got to take that step, and that first step is to be competitive. They were competitive yesterday. I was surprised at that. I didn't think they would be. I wanted them to be.
Mm-hmm.
On the road, and you brought up so many excellent points last week, on the road against the Baltimore Ravens is almost an impossibility for a rookie quarterback. Only two have ever won, Mitchell Trubisky and Jake Plummer. They're now 16-2 against rookie quarterbacks. 16-2 at home. Jim Harbaugh at home John Harbaugh at home in September. He's 18-2. It's hard to go to Baltimore and win a football game. It's hard for a rookie to go there and win a football game. They were big favorites by 2 touchdowns. The Cardinals gave themselves a chance to win that football game. We could disagree about the red zone performances and the efficiency, and we could argue about that, and we could complain about that. But here's the bottom line: they were in that game.
Yeah.
However, it was they were competitive all the way to the end of that football game. They were competitive.
At some point, that's not going to be enough. All right.
Yeah. Next year,
you acknowledge that. I acknowledge that. I think, and I don't want to call somebody unreasonable for not acknowledging that, but I would hope that most Cardinal fans can agree. Coming off a 3-13 season in which they redid a third of the roster, in which they fired a head coach, in which they brought in a new defensive coordinator, in which they shifted gears when it came to their franchise quarterback and drafted Kyler Murray number one, I would hope that most reasonable minds would agree that that moment has not come 2 games into 2019. That 2 games into 2019, it's okay to just be competitive in these games and to give yourself a chance to win these games and not actually win them.
It should be enough.
It should be enough.
Because you have to understand, Rome's not built in a day, right? They're not going to all of a sudden go from 3-13 to 13-3 and be in the NFC Championship game. They got to start somewhere. It starts with being competitive. Now, next year, after Murray's had 2 training camps and he's got all this experience under his belt, now you got to try to find a way to win some of those games. Hey, we're in it. Last year we were in those games and we couldn't win it. This year we got to find a way to win them. But that's not this year.
But even maybe even at the end of this year. Okay, maybe
one or two, sure.
Maybe even by December or November of this year, the expectation of, hey, we're just happy to be in that game and be competitive is going to change to, no, we should have won that game. Let's go win that game. But now, after two games, three games, it's not fair to put that on anybody at this point. I know fans judge this thing very black and white.
They're going
to
shock somebody this year. Yeah. They could have shocked Baltimore yesterday, but they will have one of those shocking wins.
We've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. The ending to ASU's upset win over Michigan State is garnering all the tension, but it's causing people to overlook Jaden Daniels had his moment on Saturday. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Big Red Monday with Burns and Gambo. Presented by Ramos Law Firm at RamosLaw.com. Your home for everything Arizona Cardinals. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Daniels looking to throw, looks left. Now he'll run right, running to the 10, to the 5, and Jaden Daniels is out of bounds with a first down at the 2. And the clock stops with 57 seconds remaining. They'll mark him at the 1-yard line.
Tim Healy with the call here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station from East Lansing, Michigan. I'm going to borrow the line from Doug Howler over at The Athletic because I read his piece on Sunday morning about the game. And he wrote it, so I want to make sure he gets credit for it. He made the case that that moment right there could be the moment Jaden Daniels became Jaden Daniels. As if to say a couple of years from now, when we ask ourselves, what was the turning point for the kid? When did we know? When did we have an idea this kid was going to truly be special? When did he show it to you on the field that we might remember that 4th and 8 that he picked up against Michigan State? And then that run down to the 1-yard line that allowed Eno Benjamin on the very next play to score a touchdown. That might be the moment Jaden Daniels became Jaden Daniels as we know it. I don't know. That's a lot to put on an 18-year-old kid. As you were telling the story earlier, your significant other could not believe that kid was in high school 4 months ago.
Yeah. It reminds me of the song, This Is the Moment, Tonight Is the Night. You know, this is the moment. And it was in the afternoon or morning here. But yeah, I was watching the game and I told my wife, this kid was in high school like 4 months ago. She's like, are you kidding me? As we're watching this game. And like throughout the entire game, ASU was, they were having their problems, you know, moving the football. But when they got that ball after the punt by Michigan State, there was about 3 minutes and 34 seconds left. And they started on their own 25-yard line because there was a penalty on the punt by ASU. He takes him 75 yards and methodically passed to Kyle Williams for 5, passed to Eno for 5, passed to Brandon Ayuk for 40, wide open. The defensive back kind of fell a little bit. That was a big play. Then at 3rd and 8, there's a false start by Jaden. Jaden had the false start. 4th and 13. That's ball game if you're Michigan State. That's ball game. That's game over. 4th and 13, this kid takes off. They drop 8 guys into coverage. 8 guys drop into coverage. He's looking at that. You're rushing 3 and you have 8 guys 20 yards back. I'm going to go run for 16 yards. Gets the first down. Then he rolls right and he runs for 5. Then on 3rd and 5, he runs for 7 more. Great block by Eno Benjamin, too, by the way. I want to give him credit for that. And then the touchdown by Eno. They go up 10-7 with 50 seconds left. They win the game. Controversy at the end. You know, 12 men on the field and then a missed call. Whatever it is. Arizona State went on the road to East Lansing and won against Michigan State, a Power 5 school that was ranked in the top 25. That's a hell of a win for the Devils.
Sure.
That's a hell of a win. And that kid grew up in that moment. And it's not always about complete games, right? Sometimes it is about moments. Sometimes it is about, here's the ball. There's 3.5 minutes left. We need a touchdown to win. Can you do it? And he did.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is. It's that, who cares about anything else? That drive is what defined that football game.
It was amazing. They had 141 yards of offense
going into that
for that game. going into that moment. Yeah. I mean, it was watching that game up until the final, whatever, 3.5 minutes, whatever it was an exercise in futility. It was as from both sides of the equation. Michigan State, now Michigan State was moving the ball a little bit better. Michigan State was able to move it 20-20, and tip of the cap to Danny Gonzalez and his crew for keeping Michigan State out of the end zone the way they did, because they were moving the ball very effectively at times, and they just shot themselves in the foot with missed field goals and fumbles and turnovers and things like that.
Anybody says ASU has one of the best defensive coordinators in the whole country. He's one of the best in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a fantastic defensive coordinator.
But for Jaden Daniels to lead that team the way he did, for him to look his coach in the face and say, "Coach, I got this. Don't worry about it." Here's Herm Edwards from today talking about what Jaden Daniels told him for that final drive.
We work on things like that in practice now. There's no one out there. There's crowd noise. You know, we went in the bubble and had the crowd noise, and we practice all this stuff, you know, and hopefully it works when it's time, but the quarterback was good because I knew he was fine because I talked to him before he went out there. And I said, "Hey, look, this is it. We got to do something. Coach, we're going to be good." I said, "Okay, go do it." He did.
Go do it. Stop talking about it.
Herm Edwards still cracks me up.
He is he's been great.
He went on to say that Daniels never had a doubt about coming back.
There was not a doubt in his mind that for him that they were going to be able to move the ball. That's how he felt. But that's who the kid is. I mean, we have some really good conversations on the sideline. It's kind of interesting.
And yes, there was controversy at the end. Yes, the missed field goal, the made field goal, but 12 men on the field. And as you pointed out earlier,
yeah, let's get into this.
Massive confusion from Michigan State. One of their coaches wanted to go for it. The head coach didn't want to go for it. It took them forever to get their personnel on the field. They ran them out there at the last second. I was looking at the play clock thinking, I don't know if they're even going to get this off.
And they got the and they made it.
And they barely made it, but then the penalty for 12 men pushed them back. Then he shanks the next try from 47 yards.
God.
He shanked it. He yanked it. It wasn't even close.
I thought it went to the stadium, to the fans on the left. I mean, it was not even close.
But Blandino, after the game, Dean Blandino, noted, rightfully so, an ASU player leapt over the offensive line, should have been a call. You can't review it. There's nothing you can do about it. And sure enough, the Pac-12, late last night, about 9:30, 10 o'clock, sent out a statement with an accompanying video in which they basically said, "Our bad, our mistake. That was a Pac-12 crew in charge of that game. There should have been a call for leaping. There should have been one untimed down for Michigan State from the 14-yard line.
Not reviewable.
And we messed it up."
Yep, tough.
Our bad.
Too bad. Sucks for you. Sorry it happens. Things like this happen in football. Go ask the New Orleans Saints. I'm not taking nothing away from Arizona State with that victory, okay? And anybody that does, no, there's no asterisks. That's just stupid. Let's call it like it is. Michigan State, you put yourself in that position. Should have never come to that. Should have played a better game. Should have stopped the guy on 4th-and-13. Okay, should have scored more points. Your field goal kicker, by the way, was all Big Ten last year. He made 18 out of 22 field goals, 25 out of 25 extra points. He missed 3 field goals. Maybe he should have made some field goals. You had no business having that come down to the final 50 seconds of that football game. You're Michigan State. You're at home. You're playing a true freshman quarterback in his first road game. Go beat them. Go beat them. To let it come down to that and then complain about it is ridiculous. Arizona State won the game. They won it fair and they won it square. Okay? Ref missed the call. Stuff happens. Nothing. Take nothing away from Arizona State. Michigan State wants to cry about this. Blame themselves. It never should have been that close.
I agree with everything you're saying. Every word you're saying. If the shoe were on the other foot and that had happened to ASU on Saturday and they had lost that game because of that, oh my gosh, we'd never hear the end of it.
No.
We'd never.
No, but you know what? But here it is. That's part of the game. I mean, it sucks.
It is.
Right? It sucks, but what can you do? Not going to take the win away from Arizona State. Not going to take the loss away from Michigan State. Again, you're Michigan State. You're at home. Go win the game handily and don't make it come down to the last minute.
Herm after the game, quote, "It was not pretty. Nothing that you'd want to pay to watch, but we're going to have to play this way because that's appropriate for us." They played 28 redshirt or true freshmen in that game. He said he doesn't even know half their names. We started a freshman at left tackle. Herm said after the game. Almost in disbelief.
I love that they changed the offensive line around.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to stick with that, too.
Yeah.
Basketball season is approaching. NBA 2K20 is here. Arizona Sports giving you the chance to win a copy of NBA 2K20 for PlayStation or Xbox. Go to the rewards page at arizonasports.com to enter. Two games into the season, and the Cardinals' offense doesn't look too bad. As long as they're not inside the 20-yard line, that is. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's turn it back over to Sarah Cazell. We've got a couple of Twitter poll questions today to address on our Burns and Gambo Twitter page.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
Starting with Cardinals or ASU?
Let's start with Cardinals.
Cardinals.
All right. Do you guys believe in moral victories?
Hate the term, but they are a reality. So... Mm-hmm.
You don't want to believe in them because it's cliche and you want to win and you're paid to win the game and all of that stuff. But look, there are times.
You play to win the game, right?
Yes, you do.
There are times, and I'll just say this, not often, but there are times when, yes, there is such a thing as a moral victory. Yeah, I think you just can't play that card all the time.
Sure. Gambo phrased it 1,000 times better than I did the last time we talked about this. It's a cliche. That's what I hate about it. It's just this old, tired way of describing it, but it is real. It does exist, and yesterday was one for the Cardinals. So what our audience say about that?
Fully agree with that. And our audience, about 40% of our audience does. They say they hate moral victories, but yes, yesterday's loss was still a moral victory for the Cardinals. 33% just straight up say yes, it was a moral victory. No hesitance with that. And then 26% say no, it was not a moral victory. Hesitation is the word I was looking for. Yes. Hesitance is not a word.
26% of the people who voted in that poll all tweeted me yesterday about that game. I heard from every single one of you. Yes.
Look, I'll just say this on moral victories. We should limit it to like 2 times per year that we can actually use the phrase.
We're going to put a cap on how many times
you can use
moral
victory. Because you know you can't be like, oh, what now? If every time they play somebody tough, we can't be like, oh, that's a moral victory, and that's a moral victory, and that's a moral victory.
Okay,
the time of the season matters as well. If we're talking, you know, it's week 14, and we're still saying that's a moral victory, that doesn't really apply the same way it does today.
In week two. Yeah. All right, what's our ASU question today, sir?
All right, guys. Gambo thinks that ASU is going to win the national championship. I'm just kidding.
Man. You know what? Forks up. Go Devils. The hell with all of you. You, and you. The hell with you guys. Go Devils. 3-0. Baby, you know,
okay.
Just beat Michigan State on the road, 3-0. Go Devils!
All of yous.
Okay, so like Gambo said, they did just beat Michigan State. They were ranked 18th at the time. ASU is also 3-0 now. So
go Devils.
With all of that said, do we think ASU is going to be the flag bearer for the conference when it comes to the college football?
That's
playoff?
Not the way you're supposed to ask it.
Are
they the best hope?
Okay,
for the conference, not are they going to be?
Oh yeah,
are they the best hope? Utah doesn't play anybody non-conference. Neither does Washington State. Okay, USC sucks. Who is the best hope right now after 3 games? I say Arizona State. Why? Well, they're 3-0, and they just won on the road against Michigan State. Power 5 team, Big 10, they've got that win. So right now, I say it's them.
Okay.
You guys don't want to disagree? Tell me I'm an idiot. Whatever you want.
We will later.
We always do.
We'll hit it later. That's later on the show. What's the results of the question so far?
Okay. I'm surprised by this, you guys. 70% of our voters say no, ASU is not the Pac-12's best hope. 30% say yes.
Yeah, I suspect it's because 70% of our audience believes that there's still a loss or two or three in there for ASU when they get in a conference play and they're not going to run the table and they're not going to lose just once. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Turning our attention back to the Arizona Cardinals. And the offense that moved the ball quite well yesterday, Kyler Murray put up good numbers. Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald all put up good numbers in yesterday's game. The red zone issues have become the issue now for the Arizona Cardinals. And the numbers that were put out there by our colleague Kent Summers over at AZ Central, they're 25% red zone through the first 2 games, 2 for 8 so far in red zone opportunities. The worst NFL teams usually convert 40%. The best convert about 60%. The Cardinals are sitting 25% through 2 games. And they're 2 different red zone issues with this team right now.
Yes.
Issue number one, should they be running the ball more in the red zone as opposed to throwing so much?
Sure.
And then issue number two, it is an entirely different conversation about whether they should go for it more on 4th and goal, in particular when it's 4th and goal at the 3. or fourth and goal at the four.
Okay, let's tackle them. Should they run the ball more? Yeah. You know why? Because that would mean less stupid fade routes to Larry Fitzgerald. That play doesn't work. Cliff, take that play out of the playbook for now. We'll go back to it. We'll go back, like pass. We'll go back to it. Every time they try that fade, it's not working. There's no connection there. It's just take it out of the playbook. It's a wasted play right now. You know the exact play I'm talking about.
I know. They ran it twice. They called a timeout to run it twice.
They ran it
two
times in a row.
Called a timeout, ran it again, and Cliff Kingsbury said, I can't waste plays in the red zone.
Yeah, I just, you know, speed of the game, different things that are going on out there. You get away with in college, you can't in the NFL, and I have to do a good job of, you know, not wasting plays when you're in the red zone or score zone. You got to make every play count and have a purpose for every play and can't just throw it up to somebody.
They've had 22 plays in the red zone so far this season. 16 have been passes of the 22.
Yeah, 1-for-4 against Detroit, 1-for-4 against Baltimore with touchdowns in the red zone.
Yep.
So, listen, the play calling has not been good. And part of the reason is that play doesn't work. Take a black magic marker and go right through it and get rid of that. So that's one. Two, the other thing you brought up is, should they be going for it more instead of kicking field goals? I'm going to answer that and say no. I'm simply just going to say no. Because you go through every instance in the game. I mean, they're down 10-3. They kick a field goal. They make it 10-6. They're down 17-6. Is second half, they're down 17-6. They kick the field goal to make it 17-9. That brings it into a one-score game. If you go for it and you don't make it, which you have a 60% chance of failure, well, now you're down two scores. Why wouldn't you kick the field goal to make it 17-9? So I know it sucks that they're at the three-yard line and they can't get in. I know they can't. I know it sucks. But you got to kick the field goals in that situations to keep your team in it. They had a chance twice at the end of the game to win it. Twice with under 10 minutes to go. They had the ball down six, couldn't score a touchdown. I don't agree with going for it instead of kicking the field goals. I think circumstances dictate you got to kick the field goal.
Kingsbury today, on the topic of going for it on the fourth downs that they had, said, no, we did not consider it.
I did not.
What goes into that process? Is it just instantly going for field goal?
No, we have a system and have analytics involved and all sorts of things that we go through. And, you know, you're always going to have, after the game, thinking about different situations. But at those points in the game, that was the decision I made.
There was one website I saw in particular today that was kind of giving him grief for deciding it to kick it on those fourth and short goal line situations, basically citing a number that in the last 10 years of NFL football, if you go for it on fourth and goal from the 3-yard line or less, you have a 41% chance of making it. And that 41% should trump the benefit you get of the 3 points in that moment. And this, I can't remember the name of the website. I have to go back and look through my notes, but they were encouraging Cliff to be a little more open-minded. Even a bigger website like The Ringer, Jordan was telling me about this before the show. I did not read this article, but apparently one of the NFL writers over The Ringer had basically said, look, Cliff, I've been telling all my friends how great you're going to be, but you're making me look bad by kicking all these short field goals. You need to go for it every now and then. But I tend to agree with you on that situation. In every single one of those moments, it felt justified for him to kick it. They're losing by 3 touchdowns. That's a different story. But in those moments, those kicks kept it a one-score game or kept it a close, manageable game, and give yourself a chance to live another day, another drive, another moment, whatever the case may be.
I got a suggestion. Can we just run anytime we get inside the five, can we just run a 2-point conversion play? Like, honestly, that's like taking candy from a baby. I don't know whatever the hell they're doing, but they've run 2 2-point conversion plays, and they've been simple, easy plays that have worked. Can we run that? Cliff, if that, like when you get down inside the five, like, your 2-point conversion plays, they look great. Run one of those. Run that pick play for Kirk or the Fitz coming around. Run those plays, because those are working.
Yeah.
The 2-point conversions. But I really want to take away the fade to Fitz right now, just for now. I'm not saying you don't bring it back at some point. Needs a lot more practice before I start running that in the game.
The defense has paced ASU through their first 3 games. The architect of that defense, I would only imagine this demand for his services is going up and up. Is he going to go away and away? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Hope you're having a good Monday. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Boy, what a weekend. Cardinals play a far more competitive game than really hardly anybody expected. And then, of course, on Saturday, ASU and the number that we talked about, the stat, if you will, that we talked about Friday going into this game against Michigan State. The last time ASU had beaten a ranked non-conference team on the road was 1997. You have to go back to their victory over the Miami Hurricanes.
University of Miami.
The year after they went to the Rose Bowl with Jake and Pat and, you know, Keith Poole and all those guys. You have to go back to 1997 to find the last time ASU did what they did on Saturday. Ranked non-conference team on the road. And the reason why they did it, it might have been Jaden Daniels' hello, I'm here moment, especially what he did on that 4th and 8, then on that 4th and 13 when it became a 4th and 13, and then the Eno Benjamin touchdown. The defense all day was the story of the day. And in a way, it's almost a shame that what Jaden Daniels did took some of the attention off of the defense and what they did to Michigan State, because they stymied the Spartans in that game.
So many big plays. Just so many big plays that Danny Gonzalez's defense came up with. And you could literally go through the entire playbook and have plays that stood out. One to me was the 4th and 1 stop at the 34-yard line. This was in the second half. They're down in the game. Michigan State's got the ball at the Arizona State 34. They're driving, right? And they got a 4th and 1 play, and they hand it off to Hayward, and Fields comes up with a big stop right there. Like, I was just, what a big play. Fields is the guy who had the pass interference penalty a little bit later in the game that kept that drive alive, the final drive in which they kicked the field goal, and then it was 12 men on the field, and they had to kick it again, and they missed it. But Fields had that huge play. But so often, they were able to come up with stops. You know, 3rd and 4 to Stewart for 3 yards. They didn't get the first down. They had to punt. That was in the second half. The field stop was in the second half. So, to me, just really impressed with just the big play after big play by this defense, and, you know, almost a little bit of a bend but don't break defense.
Oh, it was very bendy, and it was very much not breaking.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. They were giving up a lot of yards between the 20s. They were on the field. It felt like a long time in that game. But this is a defense now. First 3 games of the season, they've given up 0 points in the first half of any of the games that they've played. They're second in the country in scoring defense in all of college football, not just the Pac-12. All of college football. There are numbers all over the place. Number 2 in scoring defense, 16th in red zone defense, 29th in run defense, 35th in total defense. And after the game, Herm Edwards today actually talked about the defense and how it's kept them in games.
The thing they've done, they've limited points to keep us in games. It's going to be hard this week because these guys can score. They 36 points a game, you know, and they got some guys and got a quarterback. You know, both these guys are going to be playing on Sundays, so we better get ready. But they've done a good job of keeping us in the game.
But then in typical Herm fashion, keeping it a little humble for the defense as well.
Starting to get a personality, and still there's improvement, a lot of improvement there. You know, you know if you're going to be a great defense, then that last series, they don't get in a position to do that. If you're going to be a great defense, especially, you know, on the road, that's when you become really salty, you know, on the road to do it. And then you become like, uh-oh.
Yeah, if you're going to be great, you can't allow it to happen on that last drive. But he said, look, with how young we are offensively, with how young the offensive line is, Jaden Daniels, all of that stuff, it might have to be like this all year. Our defense might have to play like that all year.
It's very capable.
It would seem so, wouldn't it?
I think it's very capable of playing like that. It's a dynamic defense. Players are only getting better. I think they have the ability to get pressure on the quarterback. They've got a good secondary. Like, I really like their secondary. So they can make some plays. So, yeah, I would expect at times the defense is going to have to carry this team. And they did yesterday. They did just enough to give ASU a chance and Jaden Daniels a chance to have some heroics at the end of the game.
Yeah, they gave up 404 yards. But again, all of that was between the 20s, and they just limited those scoring opportunities. So let's have the Danny Gonzalez conversation.
Okay.
guy. He is obviously the defensive coordinator for ASU. He was the key guy that Herm Edwards lured from San Diego State when he became the head coach. We've all infamously, heard, I should say, the infamous story about the interview in Tempe.
Yeah.
Danny Gonzalez goes back to his hotel.
And Herm sleeps there.
And comes downstairs in the lobby at 4 o'clock in the morning to catch a flight back to San Diego so he can get back to work. And Herm Edwards is sitting in the lobby of the hotel
with Dunkin' Donuts and a coffee. Here you go.
4 o'clock in the morning, basically saying, so, you going to come coach with us or what? At 4 o'clock in the morning, he's asking this question. Do we have to worry about Danny Gonzalez not hanging around long enough to take this program over from Herm in a couple of years? Is he going to be under that much consideration for another gig?
If I said no, I'd be lying. This is one of the best coordinators, offensive or defensive, in all of football. People would be crazy. If you're looking for a head coach, you'd be crazy not to at least have this guy on your list to interview. He's unbelievable. He's a great coach. If I'm ASU, and I think they paid him pretty well, but be making one of the highest paid assistants in college football and tell him he's the next head coach of this team and have Herm say, look, I'm going to turn this over, whatever you have to do to keep him. Like, I'll do whatever it takes to keep him. I would love for him to be the next head coach when Herm is, ready to pass the torch. I never thought that Herm was going to do 10 years. I mean, we probably thought that Herm would do 4 or 5 years, get the program headed on the right track, and then, and then maybe turn it over to Danny. But we're 2 years in. We're not 4 or 5 years in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Herm, Herm's done a good job. He's built a good staff. He's doing a great job recruiting. He's been a great face for the program. Don't want to lose Herm, but don't want to lose Danny. It's just the thing that worries you is just like, I mean, they went on the freaking road to Michigan State and shut down that offense the entire game. Like, people know who Danny is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They know. Everybody knows who Danny Gonzalez is now. He's done an amazing job.
Danny Gonzalez, last year, last October 12th, was on the Bickley and Murata show, and he said, look, I'm not going to be a job chaser.
I'm not one that goes around hunting up jobs. I've never done that in my career, because in my personal opinion is this coaching gig is very easy on coaches. It's not easy on coaches' family.
And then the money cut, as we like to say.
We build this up the way that I envision. I'll be here for the next 20 years and maybe call it a day, and we'll celebrate a whole bunch of good times here in Arizona State football.
Yeah.
And I hope that's the case.
But you touched on something I want to circle back to for a second. There are, in moments like this, I might be sort of inclined to say, hey, look, if you're worried you're going to lose Danny Gonzalez, we might have to accelerate this timeline a little bit to get him that head coaching job at ASU. I'm not in any rush for Herm to go, which is funny because we were among the loudest critics of his hire when he got the gig a couple of years ago. We were shouting from a mountaintop how dumb we thought it was.
Yeah, I'm so happy that we looked like idiots because the program's doing great right now.
I think under Herm's stewardship, I don't want him to leave. I mean, and if that costs you Danny Gonzalez. Because somebody comes knocking and he decides he doesn't want to wait. Now, those two sound bites from a year ago make it sound like he's not in a hot rush to leave.
Well, he's not a job chaser, but he said, I'm not going to chase jobs. But what if a job chases you?
Exactly.
What if a job chases you?
Because if he keeps doing this,
there's no way he's not going to get calls. There's no way. There's no way he's too talented.
I mean, a team like, I don't know why Memphis stuck into my head, but a team like that.
He's got to weigh it. He's got to weigh it. It's not a lateral move. It would be a job to be a head coach in college football, man. If it's the right job, you wish him the best. This guy is just he's one of the best coordinators to me in all of college football. I really truly believe that.
And Jordan tells me, and he's right. This is why I thought of Memphis. That's where Norvell went when he left the ASU program. That sort of seems that type of program seems like a good launching pad for a guy like a Danny Gonzalez, like a Mike Norvell, longtime assistant looking to be a head coach for the first time, maybe not in a Power 5 school, Power 5 situation right out of the chute, but kind of working your way towards that. Look, if somebody comes knocking like that for Danny Gonzalez,
would the NFL come for a defensive coordinator job?
Maybe, but I think it'd be more likely a head coaching job at a somewhat lower level college
isn't
program.
The possibility of that wider being at ASU with Herm Edwards and all those other NFL guys?
Defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Look, all I'm saying is this guy's a rock star. The sky's the limit.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I don't think he could be successful at. Head coach, defensive coordinator in the NFL. His defenses have been. Remember what we saw under Todd Graham?
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on, they were giving up 500 yards, 500, 550 yards a game.
Todd Graham wasn't paying attention to his OT. he wasn't exactly. That was his defense. And look, I agree with you. All I'm saying is, at this point, I am not prepared to lose Herm Edwards over that.
I agree.
I'm not there. Herm's been too good. He's been too good with the recruiting and the attitude.
You know what? Part of the reason he's been too good, he's got a great defense.
That's true. There's no doubt about it. It's only been two games, but Kyler Murray is already off to a historic start. What parts of his game still need to get better? We'll talk about that coming up on this Monday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show.